All right, boys, I didn't scare you away last week. You came again. Now, really, there's a continuation to last week's talk. There's a few more that are short on that. Science and all that stuff. I digress tonight. Od Hazon LaMoreh, we'll go back to it. So put last week's derash on the hold. We'll put tonight's derash in parentheses. And because it's a hadush that came to me, and I want to share it with the hachamim over here in the yeshiva. You know, all the great hadushim have to be filtered through the good brains before we can classify it as Torat Emet. There's no better place than to come to the yeshiva where you have bigger brains over here. And hopefully it'll be accepted. I'll tell you how this chiddush came about. Every morning in the Bet Knesset, I give a small Divrei Torah after Shacharit on the Parashat HaShavua. Nothing major, just some chiddushim here and there. We came to Parashat Terumah this week, and I had already some words prepared to say. One of the members of the Shi'ud said, Rabbi, before you start, forgive my ignorance. I just want to ask the Rabbi one question. By all means, what's your question? He said, can you just tell me very quickly, without confusing anybody, what's the reason why Hashem told us to build the Mishkan? He continues and says, we went from Adam HaRishon until Moshe Rabbeinu without a Mishkan. So the world was able to exist without it. That's about 2,500 years. So why all of a sudden now the world needs a Mishkan and it becomes a top priority? To be honest with you, I didn't put too much thought ever into that question. You know, the standard question, Basuli Mikdash, Vishakati Betokham, whatever it says. So I said, hold on, slow down. You're not asking such a simple question. If we're going to answer it properly, let's open up the books. We have the books in front of us. Let's see, really, what is this Mishkan? The tabernacle, they call it. So right away, I go to Rashi. Rashi leaves me hanging. Rashi doesn't say anything. Parashat Terumah, Rashi blank. So my next approach is to Ramban. Incredible Ramban in the beginning of Terumah. You must see it inside. With a few introductions, he said, Vesod HaMishkanhi, the secret of the Mishkan. He says that Am Yisrael received the Torah Har Sinai. Har Sinai was the greatest revelation ever in history of the Borei. The voltage that day was so strong of the Kiddushah, of the Shekhinah, the birds didn't chirp, the leaves didn't flicker, even the waves didn't have the guts to rise, the water just remained still, the Midrash says. And Borei Olam came to the entire nation and said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. At that point over there, it was such a strong a surge of energy that they lost their lives. They couldn't handle it. They told Moshe Rabbeinu, the very time, man, would you speak to us? We can't hear this. It's too much for us. And the Torah tells us that that moment was very holy. Vayishkon kevod Hashem al ahar. And the glory of God rested on the mountain. What happened when it was over? Once it was over, Har Sinai has no trace of Kiddushah after that. Har Sinai goes back to becoming a regular mountain, which means if somebody wants to go to Saudi Arabia today, that's what they say Har Sinai is. You're allowed to climb the mountain, you can take a piece of the mountain, you can take your animals to graze on the mountain, the Torah said. That means there's no after effect. Har Sinai was only Kadosh for the moment, a And then after Har Sinai, after the Matan Torah, it goes back to becoming holy, mundane. Compare that to Hara Moriah, boys. Hara Moriah, Kinshan Sha'atav, Kinshan Atid Nabo. The Kiddushar Hara Moriah remains till today. Hence, if somebody wants to scale the Temple Mount, he does that at risk of Isur Karit. No offense to anybody in the room, but everybody in this room is Tameh, including the speaker. We're all Tameh Met, we do not have Para Aduma. So the Kiddushah of Beit HaMikdash remains forever. So Ramban says, where did that Kiddushah of Har Sinai go? Where did it dissipate? So he says, God said to take a Mishkan in order to package the Kiddushah of Har Sinai and to put it in this box. It's to refrigerate it, to preserve it, which means such a great Kiddushah has got to go somewhere. So Borei Olam says, build this Mishkan with all its specifications, and in it, it'll contain all the aura of Har Sinai. And anybody that wants to feel that surge can go next to the Mishkan, and you'll feel the surge. So it's an extension of Har Sinai, according to the Rambam. He brings Rimazin in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vayishkon Kevod Hashem al Har Sinai. This is Uchvod Hashem Male et HaMishkan. Kevod Hashem, Kevod Hashem. The same Kevod Hashem that was on Har Sinai, that same Kevod Hashem Male et HaMishkan. Beautiful Rambam. Ibn Ezra has a drop different approach. Says Rabbi Abraham ibn Ezra in the two-liner, right in the beginning of the parasha, he says every time Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to communicate with the Borei, he had to climb up Har Sinai. All the communication is alaha. He says it's a terha. Every time he has to go up to the mountain, there was no cable car, there's no gondola, there's not a ski lift that's going to get up to the mountain every time. So the Rambam, that Ibn Ezra says, that Borei Olam said, you know what? From now on, the communication will be on flat land. So the Mishkan becomes now the new Har Sinai without the Tirha. It's also like the Ramban, which means it's a place of revelation, it's a place of communication. But I said, what does Rashi say? We're jumping to the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra. Rashi, Rashi HaKadosh has to give me an opinion. What's this Mishkan? He doesn't say, interestingly, anything in Terumah, nothing in Tetzaveh. In Kitisa, he talks. In Kitisa, he says that the Mishkan is a kapara for Heta Egel. And he comes along and he says that the Jewish people used, you know, the gold. He doesn't say this, but this is how the Mishkan becomes a tikkun for Heta Egel. Heta Egel is the worst sin ever committed by the nation, large, Avodah Zarah. So that needs a tikkun. So as if God says, you use the gold to rebel against me, now take the gold and use it to serve. Not only that, but interestingly to note, boys, that in the Mishkan, in the Holy of Holies, there was two figurines. Those figurines are called the Kiruvim. Keep in mind, the Torah is oser us to make figurines. Lo ta'aseh lecha pesel temunat kol. Elohe masecha lo ta'aseh lach. And here in the Holy of Holies, there's two figurines, gold. Because it's a tikkun for the Eke. God says, you wanted to make a gold figurine? Okay, now, you do it this way. Zeh le'umat zeh. So now I'm baffled. This is all live TV. It's happening in the shiur in the morning. I'm quoting the rashot. I'm quoting the reasons. And I'm saying to myself, how could it be? Whereas the Ramban understands that the Mishkan is lechatechila, Rashi sounds like the Mishkan is bidi'avad. It sounds like that Rashi holds, you know, the Mishkan is necessary in order to fix an evil. Whereas Ramban doesn't mention anything about the Ege. He says, oh, the Mishkan is the greatest thing. Hasinai, Kiddushah, Shekhinah. Now this is a mahloket min ha-katzeh in ha-katzeh. This is an extreme machloket, where you have one approach looking at the Mishkan as lechatechila, as a great thing, as a positive, And you have other Rishonim that look at the Mishkan as a result of a grave sin. Outside of this class and all the other classes that you take in the college, they'll tell you one, well, when you have two shittot or you have two opinions in the science or something, one is right, one is wrong. In Torah, however, we always try to accept the third approach to try to reconcile. Elu ve'elu devrei Elohim hayim. Our general principle is, in learning, is to minimize the machloket. As much as we can minimize the machloket and try to confine it, to limit to it to a certain case, it's better. We never try to marbeh the machloket. So then I said to myself, just off the cuff, I said, I'm going to throw this out. It's worth 2 cents what I'm saying, because I didn't see it written anywhere. If I could find it somewhere, then already it has a credence. But at this point, it's 2 cents. My theory is, question that always bothered me. Ask somebody, how many parashiyot talk about the Mishkan? Wow, four parashiyot, where our Torah generally is very economical. Our Torah doesn't waste any ink. And here, when it comes to the Mishkan, it has all the ink in the world and all the parchment in the world. Ze omer dorsheni. Four parashiyot. We can't believe it. So much about this Mishkan. Was it necessary to repeat it twice? Terumat tzaveh and vayakel pekudeh. But I open the Chumash and I say, hold it. In between terumah and tzaveh and vayakel pekudeh, there's another parasha. It's called Parashat Ki Tisa. And what's the main theme in Parashat Ki Tisa? The Egel. So I say to myself, a new theory. Must be, there's the Mishkan pre-Egel, there's the Terumat Tetzaveh Mishkan, and then there's the post-Egel Mishkan, the Vayakel Pekudeh Mishkan. Not that there were two structures. But it's almost as if to say that in Terumat Tetzaveh there was one blueprint, and then once they did the Egel, God says, rip up that blueprint, and we have to have a new blueprint. Now it's a different Kavanah. It fits with the flow. So therefore it has to repeat it because it's a new blueprint, it's a new... Although the specifications are more or less the same, but it's a post-Egel Mishkan, now you have to add more Kavanah. It's nice. But again, take it with a grain of salt, because it's just one ignorant man's opinion, and it's not documented. So I said, I'll get back to you, gentlemen, I'm going to search. I spent the day searching the books. Piles and piles of books. But Siyata Deshmaya, and you guys are part of the Siyata Deshmaya, I stumbled upon a Zohar HaKadosh in Parashat Vayakel, Daf Kuf Tzadiheh. It's a two-line. The Zohar HaKadosh writes, there's a discrepancy. Zohar HaKadosh, if you look at Parashat Terumah, when it says to collect the money for this structure, the Torah writes, Me'et kol ish. Hakamim learn over here, kol ish velo kol isha, because a lady cannot give charity without her husband's permission. So therefore, it's from the ish. If the lady wants to donate, she has to get permission. That's halacha. The Zohar says, if you look at Vayakel, over there, when God says to collect the money, it says, kehum itechem. Now, itechem implies from you and not somebody else. Whereas kol ish implies kol ish. So the Zohar says, what happened? So the Zohar HaKadosh says, before, who did the Egel? Who was responsible? Who was the main culprits of Egel? Erev Rav. That was the riffraff that Moshe Rabbeinu brought with him out of Egypt. They were the ones that brought the Egel. At least they started. They were the the motivators of the egg are the ones that were the cause of it. So he says, the Zohar HaKadosh says, in Parashat Teruma was before the egg, only collecting money, Me'et Kolish, even the Erev Rav. But once you get to Parashat Bayakel, now it's the post-Egel Mishkan. Now God says there's no more Erev Rav. Those guys, we wiped them out. Those guys were Egel perpetrators. And therefore, Kehu Me'etechem, Me'etechem, V'lo Me'erev Rav. It's two lines of Zohar. And when I saw that, I jumped for joy. Because that means the Zohar understands also there's a pre-Mishkan and there's a post-Mishkan. There's two different Mishkans. And already the Zohar is giving nafkaminot. In the Mishkan of Terumat Tzaveh, anybody's subject to donate? Anybody is able to donate? Whereas after the egg, God says, no, we're not taking any money from the Erev Rav, there's no Erev Rav, they were wiped out. Therefore, Kehom Etechem. So the theory is not 2 cents, the theory is sound. Once already I saw that, the next step, what I did is as follows. I took Terumat Tzaveh, I put it on one side of the board, and I took Vayakel Pekudi on the other side, and I started to look for other discrepancies. So now I know I'm on the right path. The Zohar is telling me you're on the right path, so now I start to look. And something which is obvious, you don't need to be a gaon to figure this one out. At the beginning of Vayakel, before they discuss the Mishkan, there's 3 or 4 Pesukim that talk about Shabbat. Pasuk says, "En me'adevarim asher diber Moshe lefne kol adat Yisrael." And then the pasuk says, "Sheshet yamim ta'aseh melacha," etc., etc. Whereas in Teruma, it goes right into the Mishkan. No introduction to Shabbat. Yesh devarim bego. My high. Why does the Mishkan in Parashat Vayakel need a Shabbat introduction? Incidentally, it's from that pasuk that they learned the Lamed Tet Melachot. Elle Hadevarim. The Gemara says in Shabbat, Elle is Gematria 36. Devarim is plural. Minimum plurality is 2. So that's 36 plus 2. In the had devarim, the he is mosif, that's 39. Albeit it's a squeeze. I mean, it's almost as if they wanted to get to 39 no matter what they have to do to get to 39. So they ended with a devarim, with a ha. And I said to myself, God in his infinite wisdom couldn't think of a word that equals 39? They had to do it this way? It's a question, but we continue. Anyway, I have a theory for the Shabbat, because the Gemara says in Shabbat, Kol ha-shomer et ha-shabbat kelcheta afinu oved avoda zara kedor enosh mohalim lo. Gemara says, whoever keeps the Shabbat kelcheta, even if he worshipped Avodah Zarah, like in the generation of Enosh, whatever that is, Be'er Avodah Zarah, Service Avodah Zarah, Ba'alim no. Before we go further, how did you learn that Gemara? Reuven is wearing a Buddha around his neck. He's Oved Avodah Zarah. He shomer Shabbat kelcheta, mohalim no. Hold it. The Buddha is still around his neck? He didn't make Teshuvah? If he didn't make Teshuvah, Shabbat's not going to help. Agreed? Elam must be told. When he made Teshuvah, he took the Buri, threw it out, he said, Hatati. If he said Hatati, what do you need Shabbat for? This is we call Mimanafshach. Od pa'am, if he made Teshuvah, you don't need Shabbat. And if he didn't make Teshuvah, Shabbat's not going to help him. So how did you learn this Gemara? Kol ha-shomer Shabbat kelcheta, afinu oved avodah zarah kedor enosh, mohalim, no? So I have a theory like this based on Harambam. Harambam writes in Hilchot Teshuvah, every sin needs Teshuvah, some sins need more. For example, a simple lo ta'aseh, sha'atnez. Guy, his whole life was shaltnez. Finally, he learned that it's a suit. So the first thing he has to do is to check all the suits. Checked all the suits. They found shaltnez in every suit. He got rid of the shaltnez. Surah Mirah. But now for the 50 years that he was wearing shaltnez, he has to say one word. Hatati. Hatati, it's over. It's forgotten. The teshuvah is teshuvah gemura. Don't mention it again. God says, Besar avuncha b'hatatcha techupar. It's over. It's that simple. Check your suits and say hatati. However, he says there's certain sins that are punishable by mitat beti. Avodah Zarah, for example, punishable by sekila. It's not enough to say hatati by Avodah Zarah. You need a hatati plus. Plus what? Plus yisurin. Is the teshuvah pending? Until, God forbid, the person gets struck by affliction, disease of some sort. So therefore, you need teshuvah v'yesudim. So the explanation I want to say to Gemara is like this. It's talking about where he made teshuvah. He threw the Buddha away. But he still needs to suffer yesudim. So the Gemara says, without the Yisurin. The Shabbat takes care of the Yisurin. The Shabbat will get rid of the plus. It'll get rid of the extra that's needed. That's the Sikulah of the Shabbat. That's the Hadush of the Gemara. That whereas normally you need an extra stage to clean this Avon, the Shemirah of the Shabbat somehow is able to... This might explain a custom that we have. Custom we have is that before a wedding, before a hatan gets married, the Shabbat before the wedding, they have a Shabbat of the hatan. They invite him up to the Sefer Torah, they make a, Ashkenazim have a name for it. Even in Sfaradim, we have a Shabbat, we make a Sebet, we make a Shabbat, we make a Seuda. Why? What's the sinyan? The Shabbat before the wedding, we have a special Shabbat for the hatan. So I wanted to explain because on the day of the wedding, it's like Yom Kippur for the Hatan. God says, he's forgiving for all the sins. On that day, it atones for the sins of the Hatan from when he was born till the present moment. However, Teshuvah needs sometimes an extra Yisurin. So therefore, we want to connect the Shabbat to the Yom HaChuppah in order to make sure that the Teshuvah will be finished. There won't be any residual. So we're connecting the Shabbat before the wedding to the wedding day itself. So then we have Shabbat b'zeh. Even if Chas v'Shalom there has to come a Yisurin, the Shabbat will take care. Fine. Based on this, it's very good. In Parashat Teruma, where there was no Egel yet, God says, build the Mishkan. However, in Parashat Vayakel, which is after the Mishkan, God now says, hold it, before you build the Mishkan, all the laws of Shabbat have to be given at that moment. Because now already, this is for Kapara. You need the Shabbat, to Oved Avodah Zarah. And therefore, you need to be Shomer Shabbat now. You need to know all the laws. So it's Meduyah. And now it's Meduyak also why the Torah uses the word Ele HaDevarim. Because when the Jewish people worshipped the Egel, what was their language? Ele Elohecha Yisrael. So therefore God says, Davka, this introduction of Shabbat has to be with the word Ele. I didn't choose a word that the Gematria has 39. I specifically needed to use the word Ele because you have to know that this Ele is Mechaper for that Ele. Therefore it's Ele HaDevarim. To my delight, on my desk in my office in the synagogue, I have the Meshech Chochmah. This is a very important sefer. Meshech Chochmah in the Torah is very important. Rabbi Meir Simcha Kohen Medevinsk. Meshech Meir Simcha Kohen. He wrote an incredible sefer on the Torah. Over there, he reveals a lot of secrets of the Torah. And he says the following. he says, you know why Shabbat is mentioned in Vayakir and not in Terumah? He says, because the Mishkan of Terumah and Tetzaveh was Dohe Shabbat. You could build it on Shabbat. But the Mishkan of Vayakir and Pekudeh, Shabbat precedes the Mishkan. You cannot build it. He gives it nafkamina in the Hanachara. Then he goes on to explain. Well, why? So I'm paraphrasing now, because I always thought about this. If any of us would walk into the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, what would you see when you walk into the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbat? You'd see Kohanim making Shechita. You'd see the fire roaring on the Mizbeah. The Kohanim throwing meat on the Mizbeah. Skinning animals. Blood, sprinkling, all this type of stuff. If you didn't know Betty, you'd say this is a conservative temple. This is Temple Bethel. Where are we? Is the Beit HaMikdash? What are they doing over there? What kind of Kohanim are these over there? These are conservative Kohanim. Shaita! All the Melagot! And nobody's saying anything. So you would come to you, be a Kanai, hey, Rabotai, Shabbat, Hayom, you start throwing rocks at them like a Mashiach. You say, what's going on over here? This is Shabbat. But you wouldn't say that because you already learned that the Avodah is Dohe Shabbat. Why? Why is Avodah Dohe Shabbat? It's not so simple to be Dohe Shabbat, Pikuah Nefesh, fine. Avodah is Pikuah Nefesh. Pikuah Nefesh. Because why not? It's nice. Explanation says the Meshech Chochmah, because in the Beit HaMikdash is Gilui Shechina. What's the pshat of Shabbat? What's the reason? What's the premise of Shabbat? That there's a creator to the world, there's a God. That the world is not stam, the world is not hefker, the world just doesn't happen. That there's a divine designer, and that's God, and He created, and He rested. So the Meshech Chochmah says, when you go into the Beit HaMikdash, you see God. The Shekhinah is there. So therefore, the Avodah is not going to compromise your belief in God. So therefore, you could have Shabbat and Avodah together. It doesn't influence it. Where Shekhinah is manifest, you could be Doheh Shabbat, meaning doing an Avodah, because nobody will say, oh, there's no God here. You see Hashem, He's in the Mikdash. So that's why he says like this. He says in Parashat Terumah, it's right after Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, the Jewish people were on the highest level. The Shekhinah was resting in the camp. The Shekhinah was upon everybody. So therefore God says you can build the Mishkan on Shabbat because nobody's going to question is there a God or not at that moment. The Shem is there. But he says after the Egel with the Shekhinah left, now you're building the Mishkan to bring the Shekhinah back. Now can I be the Shabbat? Because if you're going to build on Shabbat, what's the backup? There's no backup. There's no insurance. Once you brought the Shekhinah back, then the Avodah will be the again. But the second Mishkan, you're building it to bring the Shekhinah down. There cannot be the Shabbat. I get excited from the Hiddush of the Meshech Chochmah. I get excited because already he's making Nafka Minot. But I get more excited because I see that not only the Zohar subscribed to this theory, but I see that Meshech Chochmah implicitly is saying there's a Mishkan of the Eretz, there's two different Mishkans. That's what he's basically saying in that Hiddush. But it works. I go further. When we were young, in the yeshiva, in grade school, they try to make these parashot as easy as they can, although they're very technical. They try to make it easy on the students, and they say this in the Rabotai. Just remember, Klal Gadol B'Yahadut. Parashat Terumah talks about the furniture, and Tetzaveh talks about the Begadim. So you know. That's why in Parashat Terumah you'll see the Aron, the Shulchan, the Menorah, the Kirashim, the Mizbeah, the Baha'u'llah. And in Tetzaveh, it's the big day kehuna, the tzitz, the me'il, the ephod, the hoshen, the chnesebat. It's a good way to remember. Although it's not a ironclad klal, don't get so excited on this klal. It's not 100% klal. As an example, there's a mizbeah called mizbeah zahav. That's the mizbeah ketoret. If I were to ask you, mizbeah ketoret, you say, I know the rule. Terumah. Good guess. Wrong answer. Mizbeah zahav is in tetzaveh. You'll ask, Rabbi, did the Kohen wear the mizbeah zahav? No, he didn't wear it. So it's not begadim. So what is it doing in tetzaveh? That's the Ramban's question. The Ben Bahya asked that question. Ayin Sham. I'm not coming to answer that question today. So you shouldn't fall into that trap thinking, hey, this is furniture and this is begadim. There's an exception. Fine. Now I'll ask you a question. One of the furnishings in the Beit HaMikdash on the Mishkan is the Kiyor. The Kiyor is the sink. Good. Answer me. Terumah or Tetzaveh?
Neither.
That's right. Don't let me trick you. Just because I said Terumah Tetzaveh, there could be a third option. Neither. Now, my first guess would have been, what do you mean? Kiyor is furniture, terumah. But maybe you'll be a lamdan. You'll say, no, the Kohen washes his hands, so it's like he's wearing the kiyor because he puts the water. Well, you give a whole lamdanut with the thumbs. So you'll say, it's aved. And you're still wrong. The kiyor doesn't show up until kitisa. Va'asita kiyor nechoshet v'chamnon nechoshet v'rochsa. Shela, and they jump right on it again. They jump. So the Mefarshim say could be it's a Hiskuni. They say, you see, because the kiyor is not really a mandatory vessel. It's a hechi timseh to get water so they can wash their hands. It's not the kiyor, it's the water for the water. So you really don't need a kiyor. It's not a mandatory item. Lo yitzuah, you can put your Purell machines around the Beit HaMikdash and the water there. But they said make a kiyor, but the kiyor, menorah, you need a menorah. You can't say, I'll make a chandelier. No, you need a menorah. Shulchan, you need. Aron, you need. Kiyor is a hechsher mitzvah. So therefore, it's a separate category. So therefore, it doesn't make it into the mandatory items of Terumah Tetzaveh. So it finds itself in Kitisa. Well, I accept. I'm not a problem. It's a good answer. Look at the Mefarshim over there. You'll see some other Yishuvim to why the Kiyor is in Kitisa. But I noticed something. In Kitisa, when it mentions Kiyor, in the beginning of the parasha, before the Eber, it mentions the Kiyor. It says very simple, Kiyor Nehoshet Lerochsa. Nothing more, nothing less. In Vayakel, when it talks about the Kiyor, it adds one fact and removes one fact. It says, make a Kiyor Nehoshet Mimmarot hasovot. It tells us where they got the nehoshet from. From the mirrors. We'll talk about the mirrors in a second. And in that pasuk, it doesn't say the function of the kiyor. It doesn't say the rochsa. It just says mimmarot hasovot. Hey, what's the purpose? I'm not telling you that. You told me then. Now we're not telling you. What were these marot soveot? You know what they were. Rashi says from the Gemara and Sota that the ladies came to Moshe Rabbeinu. Already we learned they can't donate anything because they got to get their husband's permission. But one thing belonged to them, that's their vanity mirrors. The mirrors that they used to make themselves pretty. So they came to Moshe very excited. We want to donate these mirrors. The mirrors have copper. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're not embarrassed. These mirrors are ma'us. Sheker achen behevel ayofi. This you're going to bring, the mirrors that you used to put on the mascara and lipstick,
vanity, and this you want to put in the Mishkan? Shame on you, Moshe Rabbeinu, banish them.
God comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, hey, slow down, slow down. These are acceptable. Not only are they acceptable, but Haviv Alai. This is the best donation. These mirrors are very dear to me, accept them. Why? Because when Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim, it says that the men already were miyuash, they became hopeless. They gave up on the Geulah. They said, we're here for generations already. They already were resolved that they're going to be slaves forever. And they said, why should we have children? To bring what? To bring children into a world of slavery? So they were already accepted not to have any more children. The wives, however, they had emuna. They said, no, we have a tradition, there's going to be a Geulah. Now, they believe there's going to be Yitziat Mitzrayim. Now, at Yitziat Mitzrayim, there's one important ingredient that is very, very key to Yitziat Mitzrayim. Without that ingredient, Yitziat Mitzrayim doesn't work. The most important ingredient that you need for Yitziat Mitzrayim is Jews. If there's no Jews at Yitziat Mitzrayim, it's not so productive. That means when the sea splits, if there's no Jews standing there at the splitting of the sea, it's a berachah l'batalah. So the woman said, we have to make sure that there's Jews around for the redemption. But the men were not interested. So they took their mirrors, and they made themselves pretty. And eventually their husbands were with their wives, and they got pregnant. So God says, these were mirrors of Emunah, these are mirrors of Tzniut, these are mirrors of Amalekim. This is not stam a mirror, they use these mirrors in order to ensure that there'll be a Klal Yisrael. So therefore, God says, accept it. No problem, nice. Hashem says, take them, and he takes them. I ask you a question. Why do the mirrors belong in the sink? Accept them. No problem. Put them anywhere. Put them on the roof of the Beit HaMikdash. You know, they had a scarecrow on top of the Beit HaMikdash in order to scare away the birds. It wasn't a scarecrow. It was like a little piece over there with pegs so the birds couldn't sit. So use the mirrors for the roof. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu use the mirrors dafka for the sin? I'll tell you what I said, and then I'll tell you what the Mishnah Chochma said. I said because the sink has another purpose. Besides for washing the Kohen, it's also for drinking. Don't get me wrong, it's not a water fountain. But one ceremony in the Beit HaMikdash, the kiyon was needed for drinking, and that's the sutta. This is a lady that her husband suspects for infidelity. Already he made a kinui, he said, Al kastri mishploni, I don't want you to be secluded with such and such a man. Witnesses come along and say, we saw your wife secluded with that man that you made kinui on. She's swearing up and down, she didn't do anything. She was learning daf yomi with the guy, she wasn't doing anything. Yeah, but I told you don't be secluded with the guy. You lock the door. She says, the door locked. She says she's innocent. The husband has suspicions. Only God knows. So they bring her to God. They bring her to the sink, and they take the special waters, and they add God's name, and she drinks. So I said, you know why they put the mirrors by the sink? Because even if she doesn't blow up, she's guilty. Because what are you secluding yourself with a man that your husband said don't? She's guilty. She's not one of the Lamed Vav Tzadkariot, this lady, no matter what she did. So I said, when she stands in front of the sink gives her a stark rebuke. Look what your grandmothers in Egypt used their mirrors for, to make themselves pretty for their husbands. And you use the mirrors in order to make yourself beautiful for another man. The kiyor becomes a mashgiach, the yeshiva, giving musar to the sotah.
They put it in the sink because they know every sota is going to be confronted with this sink, and the sink is going to remind the sota that it's okay to be beautiful for your husband, not for somebody else. You broke the principle of Nashim Tzadkaniyot. That's the sink's Musa. That's what I said. I looked at it in the negative way. Mishnah Chochma looks at it in the positive way. That's the big difference. Mishnah Chochma looks at it in the positive way. He says, what if the sotah is innocent? What happens when she drinks the waters? The pasuk says, "V'niketa v'nizru'a zara." Then if she's innocent, she'll have a child. Which means the waters that have the potential to blow her up also have the potential to be waters of fertility. So the Meshech Chochma says that's why they put her in front of the sink, because these mirrors were also mirrors of fertility. So therefore in the zechut of the kiyod that's made from the mirrors that caused all the Jewish children to be born, that was what started it all. So therefore they're saying if you're innocent, the waters will be like the mirrors. The waters will bring you beracha. Meshech Chochma. Fine. Now I say the theory again. I say, hold it. And Parashat Terumah doesn't mention anything about these mirrors. And it just says, Leruchza. Only in Vayakel it mentions the mirrors. And it doesn't say over there, Leruchza. You know what the Pshat is? After Matan Torah, the Zohar Kadosh says, Gemara Shabbat says, you don't need the Zohar, the Gemara says, Pascha Zuhamatan. At that point over there, after Matan Torah, they were extricated from the Yetzer Hara. Ani amarti Elohim atem ubnei enyon kulechem. They reached the highest madrega. Am Yisrael was holding by high madregot. There was no Yetzer Hara at that moment. At that moment, Am Yisrael was on a high madrega. In Parashat Terumah, which is right after Matan Torah, there's no mitziut of a sotah yet. Sotah's not shayach. Am Yisrael is holding by Bnei Elyon Kulechem. Therefore, over there, the Torah doesn't mention Marot Sovot, doesn't mention anything. And therefore, the Torah goes out of its way and says, Ba'asita kiyor v'chano l'rohsa, l'rohsa v'lo l'shtiya. Torah is telling you the original intention of the sink was only l'rohsa. Once you get the Parashat Vayakel, that would all change. After the Eger, the Yetzer Hara came back. Now everything is in play again. Now take out Masechet Sotah from Geniza, bring it back. Now every Avera is in play. And therefore the Torah says, Marot Sovot, and therefore doesn't say Leruchsa anymore, because now it's Leruchsa Megam Meshniyah. So again, you start to see difference between Mishkan number one and Mishkan number two. But there's something else. I don't claim to have analyzed it to notice every difference. These are the ones that I just appeared to me, but I'm sure there's more. One is very, very staggering. If you look in Vayakel, you'll see one phrase repeat itself so many times where you say it's suspicious. They're making all the kelim, they're doing. So it says, Vayas et Aaron, it gives you the dimension. Huh? And then it ends that paragraph, Kashem, Siva, Hashem et Moshe. Like Hashem commanded Moshe. And now they move on to the next item, the Shulchan. Shulchan dimensions, blah, 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 blah. They did it. How did they do it? Kasher, Siva, Hashem, Moshe. Okay, now we move on to the Mizbeah. Kasher, Siva, Hashem, Moshe. Maybe, I didn't count, maybe 10 times it says. They built it like God said to Moshe. That's a simple question.
Couldn't it say it once? I would have ordered like this. We're now about to build the Mishkan and the Botai. No, everything that we're going to do from here on in is Kashrus Yosef Moshe. Or write it and say the Botai. Everything that was just written, you should know it was Kashrus Yosef Moshe. Do you have to write it every single and every single a moment at every single juncture? You have to say Kashir Siba Hashem that this was done like Hashem told Moshe. So you must have heard already in your career of learning the famous Beit HaNevi. I will say it over quickly, but I'm using the Beit HaNevi for our derashah tonight. The Beit HaNevi says, based on a Kuzari and a Ramban, what was the sin of the Egel? Is it possible? Ramban cannot accept that the gold that was in their ears, all of a sudden they said, El Elohei Chesed. Even the fool knows that his wife's earrings is not El Elohei Chesed. She might think it's El Elohei Chesed, but the husband for sure doesn't think it's El Elohei Chesed. So what does it mean that they worship this egg? So Kuzari writes, Abad says, that they understood, they thought that Moshe Rabbeinu was God. They understood that Moshe Rabbeinu was the liaison between them and God. And therefore they felt that now that they don't have this liaison, they need to replace Moshe. Get this good. They weren't trying to replace God. They were replacing Moshe. When Moshe comes back, they're thrilled. Oh, Moshe's back. Good. Throw the eagle away. Burn it. And they even say, it says in the Pasuk, Ki zeh Moshe ha'ish. We don't know what happened to Moshe. They didn't say we don't know what happened to God. They were looking to replace Moshe. They need an intermediary. So they were building some sort of satellite in order to get a reception. And the Ramban says, why they picked the Egel? It's a Sudan, in the Merkava, whatever you want to learn. You know what I would call the Egel? I would call it what the Gemara talks about in Masechet Nazir. Avera Lishma. It's an Avera, but it's the Shem Shammai. I mean, their intention was to connect to God. But the Gemara even says in Nazir, Gedola Avera Lishma. Egel Lashetevot. Gedola Avera Lishma. That's the Egel. So then what's all the punishment? They were well-intended. They wanted to connect to God. They wanted to get close to Hashem. As a matter of fact, I would say, unbelievable. Moshe Rabbeinu was missing for a few hours, and right away they have to replace him immediately because they don't want to go 1 second without connection. It's a zirizut. Okay, so 1-2 days, you don't have a connection. No. The second they realize he's missing, we have to replace him now. We don't want to be 1 moment without the Shekhinah. So it's Avera Lishma, okay. They had good intentions. And then the thing runs amok. The thing turns into a carnival. How? So the Beit HaNevi says, yeah, all is well, all is fine, everything's nice. But the Egel is missing one very important element. It's missing a tzivui. What brings the connection to us and God? Not the ritual. It's because God commanded. It's the tzivui. Without a tzivui, without a commandment, it doesn't work. Lemashal. We put a mezuzah on our doorpost. They say the mezuzah protects us. What's the protection? The scroll? What's the protection? The protection is because God said, Uchtavtam ha-mezuzot betecha. It's the tzivuy Hashem that brings the protection. Lu yitzuyar, somebody's going to come along and say, you know, I have a bad idea. Today there's ISIS, there's all sorts of security. I have a new kavanana. I'm going to take a Sefer Torah and I'm going to put it on my doorpost. Kol hakavod. Unbelievable.
Sefer Torah. I don't want to mess with it. It's too small. We need a nuclear protection. We're going to now build Sefer Torah, and we're going to strap it to the doorpost. And somebody walks in, what is this? What kind of mezuzah? No, it's not a mezuzah, it's a Sefer Torah. He said, what are you doing over here? He said, what are you talking about? Like Korah said, Kavahomer. Kavahomer. If a mezuzah can protect, the Sefer Torah is not going to protect. Hold on. Where did you get this newfangled idea? It's my own stuff. My own concoction. Your own concoction. This is worthless. This Sefer Torah will do nothing for you on this doorpost. Well-intended, yes. Logical, yes. Sefarot from here to tomorrow. There's only one thing. You're freelancing. You're a freelancer. The Torah doesn't have any room for freelancers. The Torah is very strict on its ordinances. The Torah says you put a mezuzah. And if you don't follow this, so it's not the idea. It's the Tzivui Hashem. It's the mitzvah. Mitzvah means the mitzvah. So the egel is missing the main ingredient. It's like putting a Sefer Torah by the door, expecting that it's going to bring protection. It will not. They built this egel thinking it'll bring a connection. Not only did it bring a connection, it brought a disconnect. Why? This is Bet HaLevi. It's missing the tzivui. Oh, so he says, that's why. When God says to build the Mishkan, what's Mishkan, basically? Mishkan is a kosher version of the egel. Kosher egel. Did they have kosher bacon? In the olden days, they had kosher egel. How do you have a kosher egel? Take the same gold, the same... Only difference is that the Mishkan was sanctioned. And that's why the Beit HaLevi says, at every juncture, the Torah makes a point to say, Ka'asher Tziva Hashem Moshe. Ka'asher Tziva. That's the Nekudah. That was missing in the Egel. They didn't have the Ka'asher Tziva. So therefore, by the fact that the Torah repeats it 10 times, we're saying, this is the key. It's the key is the Ka'asher Tziva. Because this is a Tzivui Hashem, it'll work. And it worked. And I say now, to fortify my theory, that the Beit HaLevi must have believed it also, that there's two different Mishkans. Because in Terumat Tetzaveh, don't say anything about Keshet Tzivah. Only in Vayakeh, then it starts to get, because there already was post-Egel. There you need the Keshet Tzivah. That already has to be drilled in. But in Terumat Tetzaveh, They don't need it. It's unnecessary. That wasn't the Nekudah. What comes out according to all this, gentlemen? Comes out according to this, the famous principle, Elu ve'elu devre Elohim hayim. Who's right? The Ramban or Rashi? And I come along and say they're both right. It's possible that the Ramban and those of the Rishonim, when they say the Mishkan is lechetahila, the Mishkan is to preserve Sinai, the Mishkan is to give Moshe Rabbeinu an easy place to talk to God, they're talking about the Mishkan of Terumat Tetzaveh. Whereas those Shitot, maybe not Nashi, because Nashi has a different opinion in Mukdamu Meohar Torah, but those opinions that say the Mishkan is for Egel, they could be looking at the Mishkan of Vayakeh Begudeh. So, they're both looking at it just from a different perspective, but they're both going to coexist. 6 plus 1 equals 7, 4 plus 2 equals 7. Who's right? It's just that which vantage do they want to take it from? That's why probably in Parashat Mikudeh, it says, Ele Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan. It says, Mishkan, 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 Mishkan. Is there a typo over here? What is it? Ele Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan. Ele Pekudei HaMishkan. What we're saying tonight. Ele, this is the calculations of Mishkan, Mishkan.
Mishkan Mishkan is the two Mishkans. The Mishkan of the Aseh Tov and the Mishkan of the Sur Merah. It's a remez to the two different kavanot. What is the consensus of this theory? Where is the holes in this theory? That's what I came to ask you. I came to get uprooted. I came to, but I see from your silence, I will invoke the principle of the Talmud Shetikake Hoda'ah. And therefore I say, speak now or forever hold your peace. Don't walk out of the shiur and say, oh, what are you talking about? Say it now in front of me. Don't walk out as always, he's kind of crazy. You bought that, you accept that over there? And you're going to go into Bimba and say, what did this rabbi talk about? So he said, there's two mishkans. What was he drinking? What was in the tea? So then I say, question now, otherwise it goes in the book.
It's got nothing to do with your main point.
Okay, good, I'm happy.
It seems like you're using Elu Ve'elu only when you can resolve a contradiction. Are you saying, arguments or contradictions that can't be resolved, they're not Elu Ve'elu?
I'll explain to you. Elu Ve'elu Kedeinim Hayim, there's two ways of understanding. Elu Ve'elu could mean that they weren't arguing, like we're learning tonight. They were just looking at it from a different vent. So, I don't know. It's Elu Ve'elu, which they both can coexist. One is not to the exclusion of the other. Rashi can accept the Ramban, and Ramban can accept Rashi. At the beginning, you're thinking that each one's saying their Shita to the exclusion of the other. Ramban saying it's a Har Sinai Mishkan. What about Egel? Oh, no, what Egel? I didn't say anything about Egel. Well, he can admit to it. You don't admit to Vayikapiku there, Ramban. It's two parachutas. What do you do with that? Oh, okay. I wasn't talking about that. Rashi, you said Egel. Hey, what about Turban Zvel? Oh, I wasn't talking about that. That's what I mean to say. They weren't saying their Shita exclusionary to each other. They were saying it.
It's not really Elu Ve'elu, that's all I'm pointing out. No, Elu Ve'elu has to be they oppose each other. This is, they don't in reality oppose each other.
Right.
Elu Ve'elu says when they oppose each other, it's still.
No, well, it looked like they opposed each other.
But they don't.
That's why it's Elu Ve'elu.
No, Elu Ve'elu is when they do oppose each other.
Bicham and Beit Hillel, and they go against each other.
The standard Elu Ve'elu, which we explain Elu Ve'elu, is as follows. Elu Ve'elu doesn't mean we have to reconcile to make them make peace. Elu Ve'elu means both derachim are sound. Both theories follow the rules of learning. They follow the Yagmidot of Shaturan Adreshet. They follow all the rules of logic. They follow all, and you can't punch any holes into it. So both opinions, although they argue, they're valid, sound approaches, although they might come out with contradictory answers. That's what we really mean when we say Elu Ve'elu. That's what you're talking about, which is true. I'm borrowing that terminology tonight, and I'm stretching it a bit. The Maharal says, for example, Maral says it a little bit. He says, Mehodu Vat Kush. Now it's Purim. Mehodu Vat Kush. The Gemara gives a big machlok. Mehodu Vat Kush. So one rabbi says, Hodu is on one side of the world, and Kush is on the other side of the world. And the other rabbi says, Hodu Vekush, Ki Hadadi, they're next to each other. He says, obviously they had a different map. This is already, you know, he has one map, obviously, and he has a different. So you can't tell me that these two rabbis are seeing eye to eye. We would call that a machloket mitziut. That's our first approach when we see such a gemara, and we don't like to make machloket mitziut. We never like to say that the rabbis are arguing on the mitziut. We want to say that they understood the mitziut, what it was. That's for us?
No.
They want to understand the mitziut is what it is, and then they're arguing around it. But not, they're arguing the mitziut. When you're in yeshiva now, they say, what? They can accept that.
And that's what it sounds like, Hodnu Vat Kush. And Maharal comes along and says, no, the map is the map. The discussion over there is, it says Ahasuerush was the king from Hodnu Vat Kush. So they're trying to explain Ahasuerush's kingdom, what type of power did he have. So one rabbi is looking at it from the space that he ruled. Hodu is on one side of the world, Kush is on the other side of the world. It's giving you the mass, how far his kingdom, and everybody agrees. But the other rabbi is coming to say, by the way, Hodu was here, Kush was here. Now if you go this way, Hodu is on one side of the world and Kush is on the other. So it's giving you the mass of his kingdom. But Hodu and Kush were like this, next to each other. The other rabbi is saying, no, Ki Hadadin, which we just say, that just like Hodu and Kush are next to each other, and therefore he had sovereignty on those two places, because they were next to each other, his sovereignty was just as strong on the far places, just like it was on the close places. So they're not arguing on the map. The map looked like this, Hodu and Kush like this. So one rabbi is saying, Hodu's on one side, and Kush on the other side, the Gabir, the mass. And the other rabbi is saying, no, the Gabir, the sovereignty. So that's already, we got away from the Mahalot and Mitzvah. Are they arguing on each other? No, they can both agree with each other. No, I agree with you, you're looking at it from mass, I'm looking at it from sovereignty. So we could use Elu Be'elu like that as well. Gentlemen, yes, one last question.
Isn't
I'm going to proudly.
Is the case of Elu Be'elu by Mitzvah, by the fly, or the two Tanarim were arguing that there was a fly in there?
Well, in Gittin, you're talking about? Masechet Gittin? Masechet Gittin? With Elisha?
I remember the classic case of the case.
With Eliyahu HaNavi?
Just talk
about
that.
Yeah.
That's an example.
Rabotai. We're not going to go through every case of Shas tonight. But Belin Neder, over the course of these Shidrashot, yeah, we'll reconcile all of them. But we're never going to say, unless they're going to force us, Mahloket Metziut. That's the last thing. So we're going to do anything in our capability not to say that the rabbis were arguing. This is a cup? No, it's a plate. You can't argue on that. What do you mean? It's a Metziut. What is it? It's a cup or a plate? Are we good, gentlemen? We'll call it a night? Okay.